Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is season 3, episode 10. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with WISP Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center. The Tucker Center is a first-of-its-kind, world-class research center and thought leader that accelerates systems change for girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I talk to, amplify, and support my female colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. We let data tell the story and talk about research and the ways that we're changing the world through the context of sport to be a better place. In this podcast, I'm talking to Dr. Anna Baith, Director of Research at Athlete Ally. Athlete Ally is an organization with a mission to end the rampant homophobia and transphobia in sport. And she can tell you more about that as we chat. Dr. Baith is a former research assistant of ours in the Tucker Center and a forever member of the Tucker team. She's a field hockey and lacrosse coach for athletes at all levels, notably was the head field hockey coach at Oberlin College. She has a graduate degree in coaching from the program at Smith College, did her undergrad at Swarthmore. So she has a history and passion for gender issues in sport. It's so fun to welcome you to Tucker Center Talks and be able to catch up on all the good work you're doing. Welcome, Dr. Baith.
Thank you, Dr. Lavoie. It's great to talk with you.
So I have to say, it's really fun to be able to call you Dr. Baith.
I have to say, it is very fun for me too.
Okay. Well, you know, I am it's a philosophy of mine on this podcast and in the world that we honor the titles that we have earned. So we, on this podcast in particular, with the women I talk to, I always call them by their title. So tell us about your research as it relates to gender and sport.
Sure. So first I would like to say thank you for inviting me to be here. I'm very excited. I think, you know, my line of research with gender has taken many different paths. But first, I would also note that I love that you use the word gender and not sex. So for me, I think gender is fluid. I think it's a construct. I think it's something that we're socially taught to do and to perform. And I want to start by just noting that. I think for me, you know, as an athlete and as a scholar, I am really interested in how we learn to perform gender. And then even more so, I think I'm curious about how we learn to defy gender. So I think, you know, when I reflect on my experiences as an athlete and as a coach and being a woman in those spaces, sport is one of the few places where I feel like I can unabashedly be competitive. And that is curious to me, right? Why is it that it's only in sport where I feel like I can be my true self? And so I think about that a lot. And then I think about, okay, well, what does it mean to be a woman in sport who is unabashedly competitive? And how does that affect my relationships? You know, first as an athlete with my peers, and now as a coach with my own athletes, thinking about how I perform gender, how I teach gender performance, and really how I teach undoing gender.
Right. Because we're so often sanctioned as women for being competitive and being hyper-competitive, or just competitive in general. We're marginalized and sanctioned for that kind of behavior. And I know I certainly have faced that in my career as an athlete, as a coach, as a scholar. We're not supposed to be that way. And why not?
Well, and I feel like it's almost like there's this unspoken code of it's okay to be competitive as long as there's the caveat that you know, like, when to turn it off and how to be nice and how to still collaborate. And I think that code switching is so interesting.
Yeah. And especially how do you teach that to young girls to be their authentic selves, to embrace their competitive selves and not conform to what society wants from them, from us. But, you know, how do you switch back and forth in the context when you need to be collaborative versus competitive? And that's a really, that's a life lesson right there.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I think for me, it's also, am I comfortable teaching this code switching, right? Like, does that really resonate for me? Because it, in some ways it doesn't. I want to be the person who cultivates, you know, climates where people can be competitive and be their true selves. But then also I feel this need to teach young women, you know, this is how you operate in the world. And that's a really complicated dynamic.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure we could talk the entire podcast about this because it's fascinating and something I've certainly thought a lot about over my lifespan. And I love that you're thinking about this in your current work. But before we get to what you're doing at Athlete Ally, I want to be sure to have you just explain briefly what you did with your dissertation, because it's an amazing project. And sort of like, what were the key findings? So I'll let you take it from there, because I feel like I could talk about this forever because I loved your dissertation.
Thank you. Yeah. And I would actually ask, I hope you'll feel free to fill in any gaps I missed, because I think you read my dissertation just as many times as I did. So my dissertation was an analysis of women coaches who had been NCAA Division I coaches for over 20 consecutive years. So at the time of my dissertation, there were 208 women who had been D1 head coaches for 20 years. And what I did was essentially I created a demographic study of who those women were. And then I sent them all a survey and got a better sense of what their supports and barriers were throughout their careers. And then I had the amazing opportunity to actually talk with 20 of those women. So in those conversations, I got to learn all about how they got into coaching, perhaps more importantly, what kept them in coaching. And we really got to just talk about sport broadly. What does it mean to be a coach in today's cultural context? And it was amazing. I think beyond the fact that all of these women had been coaching for over 20 consecutive years, these were highly successful coaches.
You get to talk to the best of the best.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still like, oh, wow, remember how I got to talk to that person? So, you know, we're talking about coaches who not only have a sustained career in coaching, but also coaches who have been highly successful in sort of how we typically understand success. So a lot of them had coached Olympians, national championship teams, All-Americans, so on and so forth.
What I love about your dissertation is that, you know, if you know this literature about women in sport coaching, the barriers are very well documented. And I'm encouraging all researchers right now, no more barrier research. We know that. Okay, let's move on to the supports. How do we figure out what sustains women in coaching to develop programs, policies, supports, networks, whatever they may need? And how do we learn from these veteran women who have survived and thrived in the profession? So that's why I just love your project. So what would be sort of the one key sticky idea out of your dissert? I mean, there's many, but what would be kind of the top level sticky idea that you really took away from your project?
So I'm going to not answer and answer that. So as a sociologist, the biggest takeaway is sport is incredibly gendered, incredibly sexist, right? I mean, you're talking about how many barriers there are, but when I was talking with these women, I mean, it was fascinating to hear not just how many barriers there are, but really how those barriers intersect in very particular ways that make it very difficult for some women to stay in coaching. Now, you know, I'm a lifelong coach. I love coaching. I'm going to do it forever. Hopefully I'm going to die on a field hockey field. So as a coach, I would say my primary finding is institution and really boss matters most. So when I talked to these women and said, you know, all right, you've been in this profession or in this sport for this long, how have you done it? A lot of them said, I have a great boss, or I love the values of my institution. My institution feels like home. It feels like it aligns with my personal values. And that makes it a lot easier for me to feel like I fit and like I can stay.
Yeah. And you found so many interesting things. I'm trying to pick out. I mean, one of the things that is interesting from talking with these women is that they sort of landed in a culture and an environment where they felt supported and valued. And that allowed them to sustain their careers. And what's interesting from the longitudinal data that's emerging from the Women in College Coaching Report Card is the schools that are the A schools are really the schools that have this kind of culture that sustain women. And I think moving forward is that it's going to be a competitive imperative for these schools to create cultures where they're sustaining and recruiting talent, meaning women. And the schools that have cultures where is not favorable to women, they're really going to be at a competitive disadvantage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one thing that I walk away from those interviews with, I talked to a couple of women who said, you know, of course, salary matters. I have a family to support. But if you're asking me, you know, if I get paid an extra $20,000 to be in an unsupportive environment, am I going to do it? No way. No way. And, you know, I also think that trickles down to their student athletes. I think if you're supporting women coaches, it's very likely that you're also supporting your women athletes.
Well, one of the narratives in the atmosphere around women in coaching is that, well, I want to hire a woman, but I can't find them. They don't apply. And when I offer them the job, they don't take it. And one of the projects we're doing this summer is we're analyzing some data because I specifically asked women, if you're looking for a new job and you got a job offer and you didn't take it, why? Because I think it gets to this culture piece is they say, I want to be paid fairly, but it's not worth for me to take a job over there to make more money in a culture that doesn't support me. And so I turn the job down. And then the athletic directors blame the women for turning the job down when they should be looking in the mirror to say, what is it about my athletic department that I'm not recruiting the best women? And that I'm just really excited to kind of get out there to change the narrative around women in coaching.
I think that's so smart. And I think too, you know, we're all evolving. We're all learning. And I think that's certainly the case with athletic directors and athletic administrators too. And I think sometimes, at least I can speak to, you know, our experiences at Athlete Ally and some of the work we do with college athletic departments. I think sometimes they want to be supportive, but they don't know how, right? And so you have to start having those conversations to say, this is what women are saying. You know, they can't, maybe they don't tell you outright, but this is what needs to change. And, you know, I don't know about you. I feel like, you know, the report card through the Tucker Center is very similar in some ways to Athlete Ally's Athletic Equality Index, the AEI. And, you know, I found when I start talking to schools and saying, hey, I'm not getting a sense of your culture, or I'm not getting a sense that you're super inclusive. They'll say, well, we think we are, but how can we demonstrate it better? Or, you know, I'm trying, but I don't know exactly what to do. Can you give me some advice? Right. And I think those are the conversations that are really empowering and really impactful, because as we keep having these conversations around social justice broadly, I mean, whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's LGBTQ issues, I do think people are trying to learn and grow and evolve with their athletes.
I think I'll put a caveat on that. Some people are.
Yeah, yeah.
Others are, we have no hope for them and they're never going to get there. And this is not something they value. But for those that are really trying, I think what you're doing at Athlete Ally with the Equity Index and, you know, what we're trying to do with the data and the Women College Coaching Report Card is like, here's the data. Here's how you can be better. And it starts at the top with the leader. The leader has to embrace a culture of inclusivity. And if they don't, nothing's going to change. That's what I found. I don't know what you're finding.
I think that's true. I do think too, you know, I'm an optimist, but I'm hopeful that given some of the conversations we've seen from athlete activists in the last few years, I also am very hopeful that athletes are going to start pushing their departments and their institutions harder and further when it comes to inclusion.
I think that's right. And I think the work that Nancy Hogshead Makar is doing with Champion Women and empowering female athletes to hold their institutions accountable for discrimination of resource allocation is that's also going to be part of the social change. Because athletic departments, at least at the collegiate level, are all about the athlete experience. You know, that's part of their mission. And so if the athletes start pushing for the change, they're going to have to, you know, put their money where their mouth is, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, and I think about her work, and I really think about not just inclusion, but safety. You know, we know that women and collegiate aged women are more likely to be sexually harassed. The same with the LGBTQ community. I mean, the proportions are insane when we look at the research. And I really think too, like at some point it's also about safety and whether you're really creating an environment in which all of your athletes are safe and protected and taken care of.
Yeah. Well, I know we're going to run out of time because there's so much we could talk about in terms of all of this and all the good work that you're doing at Athlete Ally. And you mentioned the Equity Index. Can you just give us like a really brief kind of elevator pitch? And then I'd love to have you back on where we talk about more specifically about what that is and the impact it's making.
Yeah, so the Athletic Equality Index is an assessment of every NCAA Division I athletic department's policies and practices around LGBTQ inclusion. So we, you know, much like the Tucker Center's report card, the idea behind it is giving us a snapshot of what's happening broadly in Division I athletics when it comes to LGBTQ inclusion. And I'll say, you know, what we've found, and it's a little disappointing, but again, like there's just a lot of room to grow. We know that fewer than 8% of Division I athletic departments fully protect their LGBTQ student athletes.
Wow. 8%.
Yeah.
Yeah. We call that an opportunity for growth.
Yep. Right.
And job security. Yeah, right. We're being optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you probably get this question a lot too. I just got it yesterday in an interview I was doing is how do you stay optimistic in the face of all this discrimination and harassment and slow social change? It's like, well, because you have to, because if we don't stay optimistic, who is and who's going to do the work? So thank you for all the good work you're doing with Athlete Ally. We need it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you. You know, and I think too, I'll just say, because I know that you feel these sentiments too, I love sports. I love sports, right? I mean, that's why I do this work, because sport was a great space for me and I wanted to be a great space for other people. And that's the bottom line, right? Like when I get weary and tired, which certainly happens in this work, you know, you go back to those stories of when somebody does really excel and feel like sport is that space for them.
Hear, hear. I wouldn't be sitting here doing this podcast if it weren't for sport. So, okay, let's wrap this up. What advice do you give to young women scholars, budding sport and gender scholars? What advice do you give them?
I'm not sure I have a lot of advice, but I'll give the advice that I give myself and that I give all of my athletes. And this is it. You are going to be most like the five people you spend the most amount of time with. So when I stop and think about who I want to be, where I want to be in my career, I also have to stop and think about who I'm surrounding myself with. Am I surrounding myself with good people who do good work? Am I surrounding myself with people who are passionate, who are energized, engaged, thinking critically about these issues? If the answer is yes, then I know I'm doing what I need to do.
That is great advice. I love how you frame that up. You're, you know, some people call it your board of directors or, you know, whatever you want to call it, but we're only as good as the people we surround ourselves with. And that's such good advice. Thank you for that. Okay. We're going to do a off the cuff speed round. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Who is your favorite badass woman right now?
Naomi Osaka.
Yes.
Hands down.
Okay. What is on a song on your playlist right now that you're loving?
I don't know the name of it. It's hey, hey, you're good looking. What you got cooking? That's the song. Yep. Throwback.
Okay. That's an old one. Okay. All right. Throwback.
Right.
Love it.
Now,
okay. What is a book you're reading
China
right now?
Study, which is about how we, it's about how we understand nutrition and health in Western cultures.
Interesting. Okay. And you had mentioned it before we went on air, you're reading something about female language and censorship of women's language. Is that a book or is that an article?
It's a book, and I cannot remember the name of it.
I never can remember the titles of the books. I know what it is. And I'm lucky if I remember the title or the author, which is no offense to them.
Right. No, you know, you always remember the cover of the book, like the color. I do think it has the F word in the title. So I think that would limit your search pretty quickly.
I'll look that up. I'll put it in the show notes. Okay. Who is an influential female scholar in your work? And it can't be me or Dr. Kane.
Well, okay.
Not that you were going to choose either one of us, but I'm just going to say outside of the Tucker Center.
There's so many. I'm going to go with Heather Sykes. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of her work lately on understanding gender in elite sport. And she's just such an amazing theoretical scholar. Yeah.
Absolutely. A colleague of ours north of the border in Canada does a lot of great gender sports sociology scholar, very high theory, really deep critical thinker. Love it. All right. So that is the end of the podcast, Dr. Baith. It was so fun to talk to you, and we'll have you back on to talk more about gender and sport.
Thank you. This was wonderful. A great way to spend my Friday.
Absolutely. So you can find the show notes with the links and resources for this episode at wisports.com. Look for Tucker Center Talks under the Listen tab, where you'll find more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. Be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources of the Tucker Center on our website at tuckercenter.org and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Give yourself grace, support others, and let the data tell the story. That's a wrap for Tucker Center Talks. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.